This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Stephen Skeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. The U.S. Supreme Court has concluded its term with decisions on the Ten Commandments, computer file sharing, and the death penalty. Washington is rife with speculation that Chief Justice William Rehnquist will retire, but the court held its last public session yesterday with no word from the ailing Chief Justice that he plans to end his 33-year tenure. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports on the end of the court term.
For nearly an hour yesterday, the justices summarized their opinions and dissents. The last decision was read by Chief Justice Rehnquist, his voice husky, his breathing labored, but his sense of humor undimmed. After describing seven separate opinions with shifting coalitions in just one case, Rehnquist quipped, "I didn't know we had that many people on this court." The most watched cases of the day involved the Ten Commandments, both cases that were long and anxiously awaited. They involved displays in Kentucky and Texas and two sets of complicated facts. The Kentucky case involved the display of large framed copies of the Ten Commandments put up in two county courthouses. In each case, county leaders decided to display the commandments, as they put it, to demonstrate their commitment to America's Christian heritage. Twice the displays were ruled unconstitutional by the lower courts, and finally the counties got a new lawyer and added some non-religious materials to the displays. Yesterday, though, the Supreme Court ruled by a 5-4 vote that the clear purpose was still religious and thus unconstitutional. Writing for the court majority, Justice David Souter reiterated a long line of Supreme Court decisions holding that the Constitution's ban on state establishment of religion means that government cannot favor one religion over another, and it cannot favor religion over irreligion. The second case from Texas, however, came out the other way because Justice Stephen Breyer switched sides. The Texas case, he said, was borderline, but on balance, he thought, the display did not represent a state endorsement of religion. At issue in the case was a 6-foot-high granite Ten Commandments monument located on the Texas State Capitol grounds and surrounded by 16 other non-religious monuments. It was donated to the state by the Fraternal Order of Eagles 40 years ago. Citing this history, Justice Breyer said the Eagles was a civic organization, not a religious one, that the monument stands amid other non-religious monuments, and perhaps most important of all, that the monument has stood where it is for 40 years without anyone objecting until one person brought this case. Breyer acknowledged that the text of the Ten Commandments is religious. "I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me." But he said the commandments are also a statement of morality. As a practical matter of degree, he said, this display, like the Ten Commandments display of Moses and other lawgivers in the Supreme Court itself, is unlikely to prove divisive. In contrast, he said, to rule against the Texas monument would be seen as so hostile to religion that it would create the very kind of religiously based divisiveness that the Constitution seeks to avoid. "I recognize," said Breyer, "the dangers of the slippery slope when it comes to public displays of religion, but we must distinguish between real threat and mere shadow, and here we have only shadow." University of California law professor Jesse Choper summarizes the differences between the Texas and Kentucky results.
The single thing that distinguished these two cases was that there was no religious purpose in Texas. And that there was a religious purpose in Kentucky.
By taking the middle course, Notre Dame law professor Richard Garnett says the court and Justice Breyer blunted the political impact of yesterday's decisions.
"By splitting the baby, you help to defuse the situation. It seems to be that that's what Justice Breyer is explicitly aiming for, trying to come up with a result that reduces the likelihood of political division along religious lines."
Just what will be the effect on future Ten Commandments cases? Cardozo Law School professor Marcy Hamilton believes yesterday's ruling will be something of a boon to those who favor such displays because it provides a roadmap for how to do it.
"The issue here is whether or not the placement of the Ten Commandments is, as I would say, in your face. So I continue to think that the line between the two cases is whether or not the government has overtly endorsed a religious viewpoint. And if it has, it's going to be in trouble. But if it has not, and it is an innocuous display, which is essentially what Justice Breyer is saying, then it's going to be fine."
But the Reverend Barry Lynn of Americans United for Separation of Church and State said he believes it is only old exhibits like the one in Texas that are in effect grandfathered by yesterday's ruling, while new exhibits will be difficult to defend.
I believe the best advice from a county or city lawyer to some politician saying, I'd like to put up the Ten Commandments as a monument tomorrow, is don't try it. You'll simply be sued.
Michael Ferris, president of Patrick Henry College, a conservative Christian institution founded 5 years ago, agrees.
I think new monuments are going to be in trouble unless they're these carefully crafted displays of everything, and people who have religious motives keep their mouth shut.
The passion of the Ten Commandments debate was reflected in the 10 opinions, majority, dissent, and concurring, filed in these cases yesterday. Chief Justice Rehnquist, speaking for four justices, contended that the state does not run afoul of the Constitution by promoting a religious message. But Justice Sandra Day O'Connor countered in a concurring opinion, when we see around the world the violent consequences of the assumption of religious authority by government, Americans may count themselves fortunate that our regard for constitutional boundaries has protected us from similar travails while allowing private religious exercise to flourish. There were other important decisions at the Supreme Court yesterday. By unanimous vote, the justices ruled that Hollywood and the music industry can file suits for money damages against computer software companies for encouraging customers to steal music and movies over the Internet. Writing for the court, Justice David Souter said that there is powerful evidence that Grokster and Streamcast, two file-sharing software companies, made money by encouraging customers to download copyrighted files illegally. In a death penalty case, the court ruled by a 5-4 vote that a federal appeals court improperly tried to rectify its own mistake and thus infringed on the state of Tennessee's right to execute the defendant. The case involved Gregory Thompson, a Tennessee man convicted of a brutal kidnapping and murder. Although the lower court initially approved Thompson's death sentence, the judge charged with writing the opinion discovered a psychiatric report in the record that had previously been overlooked. The report indicated that Thompson had long suffered from bouts of schizophrenia, a fact which the appeals court concluded would likely have resulted in his not being sentenced to death. But yesterday, in a decision written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, the Supreme Court said the appeals court change of heart was an abuse of discretion. In a rare oral dissent from the bench, Justice Breyer said, "We should encourage, not discourage, the lower courts to rectify mistakes when they discover them." In yet another decision, the court ruled that police cannot be sued for a failure to enforce restraining orders in domestic violence cases. By a 7-2 vote, the court ruled that a Colorado woman could not sue the police for failing to arrest her estranged husband for taking the couple's 3 children in violation of a restraining order. Tragically, the husband murdered the 3 girls just hours after taking them. And finally, the court declined to intervene in the case of 2 reporters who have refused to testify before a grand jury investigating the leak of an undercover CIA agent's identity. Without the justices' intervention, it is likely that New York Times reporter Judith Miller and Time magazine reporter Matthew Cooper will be sentenced to serve time in jail. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.